inflation, a lower than expected national average corn yield, record diesel prices, a plan to increase fertilizer production here in the U.S., double crop insurance, WOTUS. Could Biden send U.S. ships into international waters to help get grain out of Ukraine? And finally, as someone on the show predicted a while back, the conversation to beat back inflation has turned to price controls.
Live from Friday the 13th. Via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday for Reefer Hill. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and yours truly. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheck from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. You know, I feel pretty good for a Friday the 13th. I'm thinking it's going to work out okay.
Well, and here's the thing. You know, it's our policy here on AgriTalk to pull the future forward. You know, that often puts us at the front end of trends, which is right where we want to be. That's our lane. We got our Friday the 13th out of the way on Thursday the 12th, as we discussed in segment four of yesterday's broadcast. So I'm feeling very good today, brother. I'm glad you are, too.
That's right. Yep. We got it all out of the way yesterday.
You betcha. You betcha. Smooth sailing, homie.
Yep. So come along for the ride. I mean, it's going to be a great couple of hours of radio today.
It sure is.
Really looking forward to it. So, as you can tell, I went ahead and put together a list of potential topics for us to talk about. And, it's a long list of issues that we need to discuss today, including the potential. Wiesmeyer had it in his update this morning that it is being tossed around. An idea is to get U.S. ships into international waters to help protect vessels loaded with Ukrainian grain to get it out of there.
That feels a wee bit dicey to me.
Yeah, I want to get Jim's take on that, get Sean's take, and I think your take is exactly right. It does feel like a dicey situation that we could be getting into. Okay,
that may or may not be my full take, by the way. You're just going to have to stick around, beloved listener, to find out the rest. Does that work out?
Yes, let's get to the news.
USDA yesterday in its monthly supply and demand report dropped its 22-23 U.S. corn yield estimate to 177 bushels per acre. That's down 4 bushels from a previous trend line forecast, unchanged from 21-22 based on a weather-adjusted trend. USDA estimated 22-23 U.S. soybean production at an all-time high of 4.64 billion bushels. USDA's initial U.S. winter wheat crop forecast is 103 million bushels below last year's. Chip, final thoughts on the WASD yesterday?
The soybean yield stuck at the trend line of 51.5, and that hard red crop, what growers have been telling us about it and what has been reflected in USDA's crop condition report is very clearly a tough crop out there in the hard red winter wheat belt.
Well, Chip, diesel costs are reaching new highs across the U.S., straining the operations of trucking companies and adding still more costs for U.S. farmers. The price of the fuel has increased by more than $1.50 per gallon in roughly 2 months, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. The national average price has climbed to $5.62 per gallon, setting a record for the second week in a row as prices at the pump surpassed $6 in some markets. Meanwhile, natural gas prices in Europe shot up Thursday, the day after Russia implemented sanctions on European energy companies. Important to note that $5.62 per gallon national average prices for highway diesel.
Right.
Farm diesel is going to be a little below that, but still too high.
Yeah.
Too high.
Yeah, June crude oil futures this morning up nearly $4, bumping up against $110 per barrel again. The natural gas market actually backed off a bit here in the U.S., but it's still $7.50.
Yes.
It's just, it seems weird to get used to that price for natural gas.
House Transportation and Infrastructure Chairman Peter DeFazio charged railroads for abysmal service and challenged Surface Transportation Board commissioners to, quote, act quickly and decisively to protect the railroad network. DeFazio criticized Wall Street's influence on Class 1 railroads' operating models. He praised STB commissioners for actions already taken to address rail service, but said changes are moving too slowly. The Senate has confirmed Jerome Powell to a second four-year term leading the Federal Reserve. Powell, a Republican who was first nominated by former President Donald Trump, attracted bipartisan support. Powell said Thursday the Fed was prepared to act aggressively to bring down inflation to its 2% goal, even if it created a short-term hit to the economy chip.
What do you think Bubba would say about that, Davis?
He'd be exasperated.
Yeah, blind leading the blind.
Yeah. Ukrainian military resistance remains in the strategic southeastern port city of Mariupol. A sustained Ukrainian counteroffensive in the Kharkiv region was hampered after at least two bridges vital to continuing the Ukrainian advance were blown up. China's former ambassador to Ukraine said Russia has been significantly weakened. Let me just move on to this one. Blocked Ukrainian ports are creating a global crisis, a global food crisis, as U.S. allies and others mull possible options. The European Commission proposed helping Ukraine export its wheat and other grains by rail, road, and river to get around the Russian blockade of Black Sea ports. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich. Jennifer is the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
All right. So the evaluation of how packers dealt with working conditions during the early days of the pandemic is still going on. What's the latest?
Well, a special House subcommittee report came out this week that basically, again, is condemning the meat packers for, you know, going along with the Trump administration and kind of persuading them to be able to keep the plants running and disregarding the risks of the coronavirus. And, you know, it's frustrating to me because from my perspective, I see how they did work to try to do the best that they knew with the knowledge they had. But I feel like the meatpacking industry is surely getting attacked for, you know, a kind of an unknown territory for all of us at that point. You know, we were learning as we went. And if you really look at the numbers, I mean, there are far more deaths in other areas, in other industries in the meatpacking industry. So I don't know. How do you feel about it all?
Well, to me, it's a what else were we going to do kind of situation. We're talking about the potential for a food crisis around the world as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. If we would have just shut it down, Jennifer, we would have had a food crisis in the U.S. worse than what it was. What else are you going to do? That's kind of the question to answer, right?
Right. You know, and I feel like they did step up and implemented changes, invested so much money to try to change the packing plants. And I mean, hopefully those are some changes that will help with other things down the road and be prepared if something were to happen again. But
That's exactly right, Jennifer. Good stuff. Good perspective. Learn more about it at porkbusiness.com. Thanks, Jennifer. Appreciate that. All right. We've got the free for all coming your way. Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Michelson next, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by United Animal Health, where their science allows you to maximize your genetic potential. Learn more at unitedanh.com.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Yeah, let's jump right into it here. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got the free-for-all going. Davis Michelson is sitting in as the handsome newsman and as landowner editor. We had a great conversation earlier this week with Doug Hensley from Hertz Real Estate. Thought it was we got some great insight into what's going on in the land market, didn't we?
Absolutely, we did. Sounds like at least a solid market moving forward. Some challenges, perhaps. Could be some changes coming our way, but for now, smooth sailing.
Right, right. And he definitely focused on the rising interest rate environment and, you know, basically said, listen, are interest rates high? No, but they are higher than they have been in a decade on the long-term mortgage rates. So that could start to have an impact and slow down the demand for land out there. But the bottom line is on land, if it comes up for auction, there's four or five guys that have been looking at it for the last 15 years saying, if that piece of ground ever comes up for sale, I'm going to buy it. So
yes, at least the last 14, 15 years and possibly even longer. I mean, these are generational moves. When land changes hands, often it's been generations since it's been available. So yeah, I think you're right. We're still going to see motivated buyers.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Good morning, Jim.
Feeling a lot better now. And I also got a shot of the best drug I know, cortisone, to help my shoulder.
Ooh, you're all lubricated up now. It's like, it's like greasing the planer.
I can wave high.
Good for you. Good for you. All right, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. I was going to say, usually it's a martini, but now we're hey, Chip, I got a question for you. We heard jump in the music coming in the segment. Are you a Sammy Hagar or David Lee Roth guy?
Okay. Ooh. I'm going back to the beginning, and I'm a David Lee Roth guy. But I don't mind. I don't mind Van Hagar either, though.
Here's the thing, Sean. I view them as two completely different bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Similar memberships. I have an equal appreciation for both. But when you start to compare Hot for Teacher with songs like, Come On Baby, Finish What You Started, which is sort of a lame example of Van Hagar. But I feel like they were able to produce two different fully legit sounds. Yeah. I give equal accolade to each iteration of the Van Halen group.
And most, does that help?
Does that help?
Most importantly, I look at them as two different bands too, but most importantly, in both bands, we got to hear Eddie rail on the guitar. So,
and Alex on drums too. I mean, that's
yes.
You know,
I think that reasoning is all sound. The only thing that I cannot stand is to hear Sammy Hagar sing a David Lee Roth Van Halen song.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible.
Right. And let me just say, we're talking about the membership. The one that we've left out is always the guy that's left out, Michael Anthony on bass. Hey, Michael if you're listening, we appreciate you. We couldn't have done it without your over the years.
Well, and the vocals.
Great background vocals.
That high-range vocal that he brought into it.
He's the high-range vocal guy. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Good work, Michael Anthony. Yeah.
Look at the vortex that I took us down. Wow.
What else you got,
Haney? Thank you for that.
Let's do this.
All right, let's get Wiesmeyer in here on this one. Jim, when I read your report this morning, your update this morning, one option would have U.S. ships in international waters provide protection for Ukrainian shipments. That was kind of a heavy-hearted moment, kind of it made me catch my breath.
Yeah, I think it could well happen. I don't know when, but I think it's going to happen.
My first thought is that that stands the potential of prompting more action from Putin, doesn't it?
Well, international waters, there better be no mistakes about that.
Yeah. Haney, what's your thoughts on that?
Escalation, you know, there's just, it's sort of like we talk a lot in this show about unintended consequences, and there's just a lot of stuff that could potentially, you wouldn't want somebody quick, on the button, so to speak, if things go awry in a misunderstanding. I actually saw a really good story on AgWeb, Chip. I thought you were going here was, in terms of Ukraine, is how the heck are we going to get all that grain out of there?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another logistical issue as well.
Yeah, and are we going to use rail? Are we going to use truck? Barges down rivers?
Moving it over land feels, if the European Commission's designs are, you know, if they wind up using rail and truck and river, it feels to me like that's a dicier maneuver if you're actually, you know, making an incursion on the land to move that stuff and assist Ukraine that way. That feels a little riskier even than naval exercises. And maybe that's not right, but.
Well, the naval exercise can free up the port area, perhaps. Yeah. I'd watch that.
Right, right. And I've reminded everyone, listeners, several times already about this. But go back to that speech that Putin made before the invasion when he said, we do not have a border with Ukraine. We have a border with America. So I still would contend that he believes that he is fighting a war with America, not with Ukraine. So I don't know if this would escalate things or not, because in his mind, it's already been escalated.
Well, so. A part of that comment, though, too, was he doesn't acknowledge. I think there was another piece in that speech where he really doesn't even acknowledge Ukraine as a country.
Right, right.
Which is a part of that as well. So it's this is turning out to be the longer haul. That some had predicted. There's a long ways to go to find a resolution here. It's really terrifying for the people of Ukraine.
Well, and I think a side note to all of this that is getting lost in the headlines just a little bit is the whole Taiwan thing. China does seem to be becoming more and more aggressive with its maneuvers around Taiwan too. I wonder if there's, you know, we talked at the Olympics where Putin and Xi had sort of gotten together and made some sort of informal agreement. Well, we're not going to do anything till after the Olympics. Okay, fine. Well, then Russia did make a move. Is there some sort of synchronicity between the two of those? And would a naval or land incursion on the parts of the West have any impact on the Taiwan procession of events?
Yeah. Jim?
Well, Biden could never say the word synchronicity. Xi is just biding his time. Most people tell me it's not a question of if, it's when and how. I think that we'll have to wait until the November Party Congress in Beijing to get his next signal on Taiwan.
Okay. All right.
They've been quiet, though. They've been really quiet.
Yes.
Yeah.
A little too quiet, perhaps.
Yeah, China bought a little corn from us yesterday. That was announced yesterday morning, in for some soybeans in a sales announcement today. So, before we get on to the Fed and some of the other issues out there, let's just talk about the supply and demand report that we got yesterday. You guys, the 181 trend line, national average trend line yield on corn, they pulled it. Took four bushels off it and put a 177 in its place for the national average corn yield. Jim, what's been the reaction around the industry?
Well, some in the trade are now higher than USDA, but I will give kudos to USDA for adjusting, you know, that trend line yield. I think that's their model chip, as you well know. So I'll give them kudos for dropping it down.
Yeah, it's like I talked about yesterday. I was surprised that they did it, because they could have done it in 2019, and they didn't. The last time that they did it was 2013, and I get that. I mean, there were unbelievable planting delays in 2013, but it was just as bad in 2019 as it is this year, and there was no movement there, and I thought – maybe they had just decided that they weren't going to do that anymore. Haney, what was your take?
Well, a little bit surprised as well. I think we've learned from past experiences, and you mentioned 19, that, you know, sometimes on the ground in farm country, sometimes we overreact. Oh, this is bad, right?
Yeah.
Because we got skin in the game, so to speak, and we're worried. We see some of the prices are out there and the profitability that is given up, even on four bushels going downwards. But I think for me personally, the jury is still out. We got a lot of growing season left, a lot of variables to factor in. So I think it maybe was a little bit premature.
Well, yeah, and quickly, Chip, Ben Brown, University of Missouri yesterday, and we talked about this yesterday too, pointed out, and sort of the theme was, yeah, there were some big moves here, but also in some aspects, a very conservative take
report
in this report. Important to keep in mind.
You know, on the new crop, on the 2022-23 corn balance sheet, carryover was basically where traders expected. Even with the smaller production, it's because of a big drop in use and a national average on-farm cash price of $6.75.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, we've got corn and soybeans going in opposite directions today. What's going on? Okay, well, we've got corn. Not sure where Brian is, but we've got corn going in to
Chip,
the downside. Yeah, there you are. Hey, what's going on in corn and soybeans?
Well, the corn market's under pressure here, pulling back. You know, we made new contract high in December futures overnight and just easing up into the weekend here. Probably not too much of a surprise given the strength that we've seen here recently the past couple days. Soy complex, broad strength across there. So meal is pushing higher this morning, and that hasn't been the case necessarily recently. And then the soy oil market being supported by the strength in crude oil, and you got soybeans pushing out to the upside as well. Now, I think critically, soybeans moved into the lower end of that range, and you know, it's been a really swing trader's market with that broad range that's in place.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. What are we watching most closely in the grains next week? It's got to be weather, right? Planting progress?
Absolutely. Planting progress Monday afternoon. It should show huge increases in some of the states. And then weather as we move forward. It looks like the northern areas, northern plains, upper Midwest, will continue to remain wet and cool.
Okay, very good. Big bounce in the hogs.
Yeah, they need it. Overly pessimistic in that market, like we've talked about, and just trying to get some relief in here to end up the week. But overall, still very pessimistic in that market. And then the cattle side of things, they're getting some corrective buying as well, being led by feeders because of the weakness in corn this morning.
Good stuff, Brian. Thanks, buddy. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at #AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the free-for-all. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Davis Michelson with us. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Jim, the correction from CONOB, give us the details there.
They late yesterday, they corrected the Brazilian corn crop estimate they released yesterday morning, Chip. They now forecast the Brazilian corn crop at just over 114.5 million tons, actually 114.6. That's down a million from last month instead of the 600,000 metric ton increase it initially reported. They also changed the 21-22 corn export forecast. Instead of a 1 million ton increase to 38, they kept its export forecast at 37, unchanged from April. I'm not quite sure how that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to check out the details on that after the show as well, because like you said, you got to wonder exactly how something like that could happen.
Yeah, okay. And CONAB is the equivalent of USDA in Brazil.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Confirmation of Powell. It was widely expected, but what do you make of it, Jim?
Well, it's actually his interview that he gave to NPR that raised a lot of eyebrows, saying doing a soft landing is going to be very difficult. And also, he's not going to rule out rate increases above 50 points.
Yeah. Haney, what's your thoughts?
So that's a little bit of a change, though, isn't it, Jim?
It is a change.
They were a little less hawkish last time we heard some commentary from him. You know, on the soft landing thing, I just think, isn't that the truth? Like, does everything need to be like cuddly and huggy and, hey, it's going to be fine? Like, yeah, it's going to be fine, but there's some pretty rocky, tough roads in front of us here.
Yeah.
And as we try to transition to a little bit more fiscal conservative response, like everything just can't be about, hey, we're going to throw some money at it, it's going to fix it. It's kind of felt kind of honest.
Right. Yeah. We're going to have to break it before we can fix it. That's the bottom line, I think. And, that, you know, that's what I've been saying for a long time, is that it's not a question of if we're going to be in a recession. It is a question of how long it's going to last and how deep it is going to be. If we can start talking about the potential for more than half point increases, and, you know, that conversation is out in the marketplace today, and we've got the Dow almost 500 points higher right now. Yeah. So the market is taking the idea of a 75 point basis point increase, taking it well, I think. It looks like a possibility.
Chip, you and I have talked about the rip the Band-Aid off approach. Do you want 2 or 3 years of, you know, slow pain, or do you just want to get it over with, get it done, and move on as quickly as possible? Yeah. And maybe we're seeing Powell express a leaning toward that direction anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And yeah, I'd rather just rip the Band-Aid off. Let's get it
done. I would
too.
Yep.
And move on. Wiesmeyer, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is taking on gasoline prices. And at a press conference yesterday, she said that they're going to vote on a bill that would enable the president to issue an emergency declaration, making it illegal to increase the price of gasoline.
Yeah, and not just gasoline, some other products too. When you look at the bill, Chip, let's go bottom line. She didn't just allege price gouging. She just said there was price gouging. Now, on the bottom line, it could pass the House. Almost anything can pass the House, but I do not see the 60 votes needed in the Senate. But, you know, this is price controls. And I go way back, as you well know, to Nixon years, and he tried price controls, and let's put it bluntly, that failed, because it leads to even higher prices.
Yeah. Like, well, who comes up with this stuff? Like, man alive. Terrible idea. Awful.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
There's no way that goes well. It sounds great to people. Oh, they're going to put a lid on gas prices. Fantastic. That they're trying to save us. It's so shallow in the thinking. We have to get past this. This gets back to the comments I had about Powell. Everything can't be cuddly. Like,
you're right.
It's getting to the point where it's frustrating.
It's just another example of, there is a segment in Congress, a group in Congress that believes that you can just legislate something and it'll make everything all right. Well, I'll guarantee you the surest way to create scarcity of anything is to cap the price. It's that simple.
History clearly shows that both administrations do these things, and they do not learn lessons.
Yeah. Yeah.
It goes back to my question from earlier this week. Are we looking at just optics for the sake of optics, or are we looking at genuine misunderstanding of how things actually work? I don't have an answer for that. It seems like the same sort of situation, though. We want it to look good.
Right.
On the surface, it looks great. Is it really going to work?
It's kind of like adding 681 counties to the eligible list for double crop crop insurance. Mm-hmm. I'm still digging into all of the details, because it looks like if a county has a history of winter wheat production, it doesn't necessarily mean that they've got double crop insurance eligibility. You would think that if you've got winter wheat, well, of course, they would then have double crop insurance, because why would you give some counties, some farmers in some counties, incentive to plant double crop beans over counties that don't have that eligibility? That doesn't make sense to me, but evidently it's true. And what I'm hearing, I've checked with three guys, and even in the counties that have a history of winter wheat production, Jim, the guys typically, if the market is providing incentive, will go ahead and double crop beans anyway, even though they can't put insurance on them.
So, yes.
So I don't know how this is going to add any double crop opportunities if guys are already doing it.
On the edge. And there's some moral hazard involved in this. Yeah, they are adding 681 counties. So it wouldn't be more than double. Let's see, that would be close to a 50% increase, because the announcement that added 681 counties would bring it to 1,935, which means there were 1,254 that qualified before the announcement. But either way, there are several issues relative to the crop insurance program that they have to deal with, Chip.
Yeah, yeah. The other question that I've asked a couple, and I don't know, Jim, if this would even be possible, but okay, could they adjust deadlines? Could they adjust deadlines for this year and make the spring price on soybeans part of a, you know, let guys buy the double crop insurance for this year?
Yeah, I think they have some administrative leeway there. But again, they have to make other action to make the crop insurers not so vulnerable on the potential impacts, Chip. So it's not as easy as an announcement. Once again, administration of announcements.
And is lack of crop insurance on double crop beans in some areas, is that what's holding the acres back? Like, is this actually a fix? Like that, I think it just,
because of what the markets are doing right now, Haney, what I'm hearing is no, it's not going to hold back double crop acres, because the market is providing plenty of incentive to double crop beans. If somebody's set up to do it, can handle it, have got the inputs, have got the seed, have got the, they'll probably go ahead and double crop beans. Some of that's got to be built into the 91 million, I would think. Yes, 91 million acre projection or intentions from the prospective plantings report.
But it only can happen in agriculture. When Vilsack, as ag secretary, talked about some of these administrative options, later on he talked about the concern that prices will go down in after the 2023 crop. Only the government can take actions to boost acres at one end and then worry about downward prices the following year. That's classic bureaucrat.
Okay. All right. So here's another
Leave it alone.
Here's another one. They're doubling up the aid, the funding, the whatever, to increase domestic fertilizer production, pushing it to $500 million. And at the same time, they are pushing the precision ag program to producers that is intended to lower fertilizer use. So what kind of messages are the fertilizer producers getting from that? Do you take the check and try to build something in a couple of years, or do you say, but they're trying to get rid of fertilizer use? What do we do?
What if we just cap the price of natural gas? I mean, if we're capping gasoline, let's cap that. And the producers would be happy as a clam. We can get cheap fertilizer that way. Why not?
Sure.
Well, they may be looking at reducing fertilizer use from the standpoint of trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the production of fertilizer, which is interesting at a time where they're also trying to boost domestic production. All this all just conflicts with each other. But we also know that if you do implement precision variable rate on your farm, it doesn't mean you're using less fertilizer. You're just following a 4R strategy, putting it like in the right places with the right amounts.
Which is good sense to begin with.
Exactly. Yep.
But I think there are some positive elements for the precision agriculture, that there are probably more than a few acres that don't need that fertilizer. Real big update. Monday, Texas A&M is going to release their updated fertilizer impact report.
Excellent. All right. We'll talk more about that coming up next on AgriTalk.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's May 17th online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. We've got the free-for-all going today.
I know people hear that. I know they do. I see you out there.
All right. We're going to wrap up today's free-for-all. We've got Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio's Sean Haney, and, of course, Davis Michelson is with us.
Hey, go ahead. Can I throw in, we were talking about the extra money for fertilizer production in the U.S. Yeah. Just as a reminder, you remember when, I don't remember when the ribbon cutting was on that Lee County, Iowa fertilizer plant, which was down in Weaver, a completely green field. I was there when they put the shovel in the ground. It was a cornfield. So they built it from the ground up, and at that point, I want to say 14 or 2015 ish maybe, they cut the ribbon and finally started production. A huge plant, cost 1.2 to 1.5 billion. That's a billion with two L's to build, and we're talking about a $500 million give to encourage fertilizer production. I don't think we can look at that as we're going to build more plants necessarily. Right. I'm a little confused on what that money is for.
You guys, I haven't talked to anybody that thinks the proposed changes to the crop insurance, the support for fertilizer, or the push of precision ag is going to make any difference at all in the supply. At Jim Smith 87, hey Jim, says he's over in Ohio. He says we regularly raise winter wheat, double crop. No, Ohio or Indiana? I'm not exactly sure. Eastern belt. but he says we regularly raise winter wheat. Double crop beans are typically not feasible for us when we harvest wheat in early July. Okay? So Jim's in Northeast Indiana there. So I don't think what has anybody suggested that these mean anything other than another announcement from the administration?
That's basically it. I mean, they're trying. I think Davis was right. It's the optics of it. We're seeing that all over the place. I mean, look at the infant formula. For babies, the same thing. They're trying to opt that out of existence, but it's going to be a while.
Well, and the lag. Think about we're going to build a fertilizer plant. Think about all the extra production we're going to have domestically, and then 4 years from now, it's operational, or 3 years, whatever it is, and we're on the other side of it.
Here's another one that bothers me on this. Jen Psaki, the White House spokesman, said that they knew that the formula shortage was coming, and we've been working to resolve the problem for a long time. Why didn't you fix it?
Yeah, why don't they have that Abbott plant restarted? It's almost been mothballed too long.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Securities and Exchange Commission. I talked to Farm Bureau President, American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall earlier this week on Wednesday, And we talked about something that the Security and Exchange Commission is proposing. It's called the Enhancement and Standardization of Climate-Related Disclosures for Investors. One of the concerns that they've got is, for example, it could ultimately force, say, a hog producer to measure and document air quality conditions around a finishing house. Jim, you think it could get to that?
Well, they want to get to that. I'll tell you, I attend a lot of hog industry meetings, and this is near the top, other than Prop 12. This is near the top of their issues, Chip.
So this is all part of the environmental social governance push.
ESG push. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Haiti kind of scares me.
Yeah, well, so, and from 100,000 feet, Chip, it's okay. It's the details that really where the rubber hits the road. Should if there's something that hog producers can do, that should be looked at. If it's a case of, reducing by 20% or 10% or 5%, whatever the metric is, but if it's like eliminating, it's impossible. And basically that basically shuts down, that's a tool to try to shut down the industry as opposed to
Make it functional. Yeah, that's exactly right. What's the enforcement on the other end? If you have some sort of a mishap, or you don't document it correctly, or you can't provide the information that they are demanding in the time period in which they demand it, what is the enforcement on the other side of that? That's part of the details that we need to know. Hey,
and they at least extended the comment period. Real quick, Chip, I want to make my famous prediction on pork. Okay, with the prices down low now, pork shortages later this year are going to be huge based on the numbers they're seeing out of packing plants, especially from companies that take the blood from those plants. They're running into trouble sourcing some of the blood. So that tells me later this year, the story will be the shortage of pork. Remember, we said it on AgriTalk.
Wow. If I can't get my pork chops, I'm going to freak out.
Bye now.
Well, is true.
Think about poultry and the challenges to the poultry sector, what's happening with avian influenza and the issues and the cracks in that supply chain, the supplies there. Both those two proteins, there's some challenges.
Yep. Hey, guys, just a suggestion here. Wednesday morning's Farmer Forum, James Johnson. We had Joe Del Bosque from California on with a sad, sad story about what a lack of water is doing to his operations out there. But James Johnson gave us an update on what it's like to farm in the shadow of the wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. If you haven't heard that yet, I'd go back and listen to it. It is really telling of some of the issues that they are dealing with down there. Haney, good work today, buddy. Thank you.
Hey, everybody, have a great weekend. Cheers.
You too. Jim Wiesmeyer, talk to you Monday morning. Signal to noise.
Absolutely.
All right. Davis, I'll talk to you this afternoon when we have a conversation with Craig Van Dyke from Top Third Ag Marketing. Monday morning, Machinery Pete and Scott Richmond, economist at the Renewable Fuels Association.